Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 23rd of May. A beautiful day it is here in Milwaukee. And this is All Things Political. You always hear this program at 1 o'clock on Mondays. And today, our guest is Francesca Chambers. She's the White House correspondent for DailyMail.com. She's covering the 2016 presidential race with a focus on Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. One of her latest pieces is headlined, Donald Trump closing in on Hillary in a national poll, but he'd get burned by double digits if Democrats nominated Sanders. Lots of news over the last few days. Hillary Clinton told CNN, Chris Cuomo, I'm going to be the nominee, and Bernie Sanders needs to do his part to make sure I beat Donald Trump in November. In the New York Times, interesting piece yesterday, the Republican Party's largest financial backers remain deeply resistant to Trump's candidacy, and it could make it difficult for him to meet his goal of raising $1 billion before the November election. Bernie Sanders is asking that Hillary Clinton debate him before the June 7 primary. Howard Dean is saying that Bernie Sanders has the greatest appeal of any progressive candidates we've seen probably since Teddy Roosevelt, but that has to be converted into an on-the-ground machine that delivers. He has offered little support for a broader progressive movement. And we learned in the New York Times Sunday Magazine section yesterday that Donald Trump throws salt over his shoulder after he eats. That was news to me. We'll be welcoming phone calls during the course of this hour for Francesca. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter as well, and that's at K Dunn Show. Francesca is in Los Angeles. She's with media and in transit in L.A. Francesca, hi. Thanks so much for being with us again. Hi.
Yes.
Where are you going?
Thank you for having me. We are en route right now to Bernie Sanders' first rally of the day. We'll be in East Los Angeles, and we will be with Rosario Dawson there. She'll be at both of his rallies today. The second one is in Santa Monica. So we're doing the full sweep of L.A. this week.
How are the crowds for Bernie Sanders? Still large?
Oh, yeah. He still gets a lot of people, and you know, to his credit, he always goes outside and he talks to the overflow crowd as well for a little bit before he comes inside to talk to his supporters inside as well. So everybody gets to see Bernie, even if they don't make it into the rally.
Hmm. So Hillary Clinton over the weekend said, I'm going to be the nominee. Bernie Sanders needs to do his part to make sure that I beat Donald Trump in November. Is it true she will be the nominee, and will he do his part, and what part may that be to make sure that she beats Donald Trump in November?
Well, those are two very big questions. The first one about whether or not Hillary Clinton will be the nominee. The math does favor her. He is behind by more than 200 pledged delegates in this race, and he has to win California, and he has to win New Jersey, but not just win them. He would have to win by a very large margin in both of those states in order to be able to get ahead of her in pledged delegates. And then on top of that, he'd still have to convince those superdelegates in the race to switch their support from her to him, and many of them have known the Clintons for a very long time. Her husband was a two-term president. So he has, as he likes to say, a huge uphill climb, and certainly he's doing his best to try and overcome her.
Yeah. He sure isn't very happy with the Democratic National Committee. That's probably an understatement, isn't it, Francesca?
Yes, very much so. What his campaign manager said was that Debbie Wasserman Schultz was throwing shade at their campaign, to be exact. So not very happy at all.
Mm-hmm. And has this brouhaha over the Nevada Democratic Convention ended? Was there legitimate concern, well, obviously, about the phone call that was made? I don't know if anybody knows who made that phone call. But were you there? If you weren't, what have you heard about how disruptive that was?
I wasn't in Nevada. I travel with the senator typically or with the secretary, and we were actually on our way to Puerto Rico when all that was going down in Nevada. But Trump seemed to be cool enough a little bit between the Democratic National Committee and Bernie Sanders. They came to an agreement over a separate issue they've been fighting about, a system that he said was rigged against him for the convention. He was saying that that Debbie Wasserman Schultz was essentially stacking the deck against him with the delegates, saying that she was putting Hillary Clinton supporters, too many of her own people, on these platforms that will decide, on these committees that will decide what the rules are. And they came to an agreement that will give him more placements. Hillary Clinton will only have one more placement than him. So it seems to be like they're working things out, and the DNC is certainly trying to end things in this race amicably with both candidates.
Mm. Well, he does have a point. They haven't really been very nice to him along the way, have they?
Well, it is true that from the very beginning, these superdelegates have said, a majority of them, that they would be supporting Hillary Clinton, and we haven't seen that change. And so it's easy to understand why Senator Sanders feels that this whole thing was, you know, stacked against him from the very beginning, because even if he was winning the pledge delegate count right now, superdelegate count that's supporting her would tip scales in her favor.
Mm-hmm. What about this point that Howard Dean made that Bernie Sanders really needs to broaden this progressive movement, that he's done a remarkable thing at this point, but maybe what will happen is after the election it will all fall apart? Is he indeed intent on forming a strong and lasting progressive movement in the Democratic Party?
Well, that's the next step, is seeing what he decides to do with everything that he's built. One thing that he could do is start sort of an offshoot organization, if you recall, after the last election, Organizing for Action, Organizing for America. It didn't just disappear. The Barack Obama apparatus and their supporters morphed into this entire other organization that was supposed to push for the issues that President Barack Obama had supported during the election. Now, we haven't really seen them doing as much recently. It kind of tapered off a little bit, but he could form a group out of his supporters, out of his campaign staff, or they could form that, more so to speak, since he would still be in the Senate, that would be able to carry on this movement if he wanted to.
Mm-hmm. When asked again by Chris Cuomo on CNN about Bernie Sanders possibly being her running mate, she declined. She said, I'm not going to get into that. Is there mm-hmm. any possibility of that happening, Francesca?
I think that's highly unlikely, which is something Senator Sanders regularly says as well. He does not think that's likely. That's not something that he expects. And realistically, when she says it, oh, it's too early to talk about that, it's very funny, right? Because in the same exact interview, it's not too early to declare herself the nominee, but it's absolutely too early to declare who her running mate's going to be, you see, because she hasn't won the nomination. So it's a contradiction there. And the reason is because she doesn't want to say what I just said, which is that she probably would not pick him, and probably feels that would just anger Sanders supporters more at this point, and she still needs to win them over in the general.
Yeah. So what's your feel about California? Does he stand a chance in California or not?
The polls here have actually been very mixed. One week there will be a poll that has her up by 12 points. Another week she'll only be up by 2. And certainly we've seen that same sort of behavior in other states that he went on to win by slim margins. So it's absolutely possible that he could win here. But the problem again becomes, he doesn't just need to win. He would need to beat her by,
right.
He would need to beat her by 15 points or more, essentially, in the state. And there is no polling that would suggest what's going to happen. And he's done that in very few states so far, even ones that we knew he was going to win.
Mm-hmm. Is he running out of money?
And that's exactly the other point. So in April, he raised roughly $20 million less than he had raised in other months prior this year. That fundraising had allowed him to outspend her in media markets and in advertising, and has helped him to do so well in some of those states that he eked out a win in. In California, where money is everything because the media market is so expensive, he will have much less money to compete against her with than he has in those previous states, and that's going to be very important. He has about $500,000 put forward towards advertising, and she doesn't have any currently, so he still is spending more than her, but he would likely need to spend a lot more than that to get his message out. The candidate can only be in so many places at one time. Take a look at this week. Again, we're spending most of the week in just the L.A. area. California is quite a huge state. It's very hard to get everywhere.
Yeah. Are you tired by all of this?
Tired. I only got up at 5 o'clock in the morning on the West Coast time, and we have to run around until, you know, about 11 p.m. on the West Coast. It's very interesting. Bernie Sanders is 74, and I often ask myself, how does he do this every day?
Right.
How is the candidates not feel so tired? And I think looking at Hillary Clinton's schedule recently, you have to wonder, she's starting to feel kind of tired, because there have been several days over the course of the last couple of weeks since the point in which her campaign feels that she's essentially wrapped it up against Sanders, where she hasn't been on the campaign trail at all. It has taken the weekend off, and you really can't blame either of the candidates at this point. It's a tiring campaign.
I'll bet it is. So do you know from traveling with them so much, how do they do it? Do they do yoga, or do they do 10-minute naps like Teddy Kennedy did, or what do they do?
Well, Hillary Clinton is said to do yoga. We don't really get to see her a lot, but we typically stay when we're with Senator Sanders at the same hotel as the senator. I kind of get the idea that he really is excited by all this. He really believes in a lot of what he has to say.
Right.
I think there's an adrenaline rush in this campaigning and meeting all the people. And there is, of course, for all of us covering it, too. We're really excited to see what happens in the end.
Yeah.
It's interesting to be a part of history.
Oh, I'm sure it is. It's an incredible election year, no doubt about that. So we got to go to Donald Trump here for just a moment. The Times had a really interesting piece yesterday, and it seems to me as though this could make a difference in the general election, in addition to a lot of other issues. The Republican Party's largest financial backers remaining deeply resistant to Trump's candidacy, and it could make it difficult for him to meet his goal of raising $1 billion before the November election. Do you think that those donors, those high rollers, are going to stay steadfast in their determination not to give Trump money?
Well, I think a lot of people on the Republican side don't want to see Hillary Clinton as the president. That
right.
seems to be the rallying point for Republicans. It's either Donald Trump or most likely Hillary Clinton at this point. So, you know, you get to choose, and people are calling it, you know, choose the best of your two evils, you know, is what some people are saying. And so I think that Republicans will, in the end, just given how much they dislike the Clintons, how much they dislike Hillary Clinton, will probably get behind Donald Trump and give him the money that he needs to defeat her. But he's willing to use more of his personal capital if he has to, and his money, as we know, is his pockets are quite deep. So wouldn't underestimate how much his own personal capital he would put into the race as well.
Mm-hmm. And this campaign is going to be, at least from his side, and probably from hers as well, I'm not sure how she will take him on during TV ads, et cetera, but he's going after Bill Clinton. These rape accusations against Bill Clinton when talking about Clinton's past behavior with women, with Sean Hannity. I'm just wondering, is that a successful strategy to go after Bill Clinton's women? I mean, it was so long ago at this point, and he really was exonerated by the American people then. Is it different now?
Well, there are a lot of people, I think, that are my age who don't remember a lot of what happened at
right,
that time.
Right.
They were way too young to remember all that. So for one stance, you could say, you know, maybe this generation just doesn't care about a scandal that's that old. But in another sense, I do think that Donald Trump is trying to remind people who maybe didn't know about those things. Look, this is what happened. Is this really the type of guy that you want back in the White House? But more importantly, he is trying to deflect from his own problem with women. Whenever Hillary Clinton and the Democrats hit him with accusations of mistreatment of women, his basic response is to say, you know, look, you're saying that I'm an abuser and I'm rude towards women. Look at Bill Clinton and the charges that have been put forward towards Bill Clinton. So it's a way to kind of get rid of those charges, or at least undercut those charges against his own campaign and against him personally about his record with women.
Hmm. I know you're covering the Democrats right now, but I found the Times Sunday Magazine piece interesting about Donald Trump. Not a whole lot of new information other than he throws salt over his shoulder after he eats. Isn't that weird?
Well, I think that everybody has some superstitions, and certainly when you're running for president, you can never be too careful, right? Never be too careful with your good luck charm.
So it might
work. I think it was President Barack Obama who said in an interview earlier this year, he was asked about in that YouTube one of the YouTube interviews that he did with the YouTube star, like, named something that he carries in his pocket all the time. And he, like, talked about all these things in his pocket, like all these things that he carries for good luck out of his pocket.
Really?
Yes, he did. And so, you know, even the current president of the United States has some lucky charms that he carries around.
They're just like baseball players, right? They're real superstitious, and I'm sure other sports figures don't change your socks, don't change your underwear, yeah, because you won the game yesterday.
Well, I will put it this way. We don't know what Bernie Sanders' lucky charm is, but have you seen the Saturday Night Live skit about how he only has four pairs of underwear?
No.
Okay, well, every one of your listeners must go back and watch this Saturday Night Live skit of Larry David and Bernie Sanders, where he suggests that he's so frugal and that he only has four pairs of underwear. So you'll get a kick out of that. Maybe that's his good luck charm.
Thank you for the political advice, Francesca. We do want to be informed. We welcome phone calls for our All Things Political segment, and here's how you reach us, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook, The Kathleen Dunn Show. Twitter is @KDunnShow. Francesca Chambers is White House correspondent for Daily Mail. She is covering mostly the Democrats. She's currently on a bus in L.A., and she's going to Bernie Sanders' rally. And she writes extensively about Sanders and Clinton, and she knows her politics. So of what we have covered so far, what are your thoughts? Is it a foregone conclusion that Hillary Clinton will be the nominee for her party? Is it time for Bernie Sanders to do his part, and what part that might that be when the time comes, and when should the time come? Are any of you upset about what happened in Las Vegas with the Nevada convention, Democratic convention, and the uproar that took place there? Donald Trump, you know, I still wonder, and maybe you can figure out a path for victory when you have such high disapproval ratings among women, among minorities in this country. Can you win the presidency? I mean, how would you exactly do that when the disapproval ratings are so high? But speaking of disapproval ratings, the favorability ratings for Trump and for Clinton are in the 30s, and they're in the low 30s at that, which is pretty extraordinary for our presidential choices, isn't it? Well, let's go to you. We have a lot of you calling in right now, and room for one more. So, nope, there it is. It's filled. So just keep our number in your heads. But go to the Facebook page, too, because we love to read your comments on our Facebook page, particularly about politics, everything else as well. That's the Kathleen Dunn Show. We'll start taking your calls momentarily. I am Kathleen Dunn, and you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go to phone calls. 800-486-8655. Francesca Chambers is our guest for All Things Political, White House correspondent for thedailymail.com. She's covering the 2016 presidential race, and we start our calls with Casey in Minocqua. Hi, Casey.
Well, good afternoon to you and your guest. How are you today?
Fine. How are you?
I'd like to make two comments, and if you'd like, I could answer some questions you questioned me back. First off, when Hillary announced that she was going to run for president, I think in her mind, she said that I'm going to be anointed because I've earned it, I've done everything, which really she didn't. But I don't think she's quite really come to grips with that Bernie Sanders is doing so well against her. And also, Kathleen, you made a comment that the American people have more or less, I can't remember, you just forgave Bill Clinton, what he did to many women. There's many, many Americans that have not forgotten how Bill Clinton treated numerous women. And I don't want to get into graphics, but it's been proven over and over again what he did. A lot of people have not forgotten about Bill Clinton, what he did while he was president. Very inappropriate.
Yeah, and, but what does that do to Hillary Clinton's campaign? Is it fair to go after him so many years ago or not?
Well, I will tell you this. I think in this campaign, if anything is going to go, and
I think you're
right,
going
to be politically correct.
Francesca.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned whether or not it's fair to go after Bill Clinton. the thing is, he's out on the campaign trail as much as Hillary Clinton is out on the campaign trail. They're not together on the trail. He goes to places that she's not going to very strategically. For instance, they sent him to Puerto Rico while she's, you know, in another state, or he'll go to New Mexico, or he goes to California before her. They have deployed him very effectively on the trail to double the amount of ground that she can cover, and Chelsea Clinton as well. And so when you put him out there as heavily as the candidate, it does open him up to attacks, particularly when also Hillary Clinton's saying that she'll put him in charge of her economic revitalization program. Well, at the same time, there she's also saying, I'm going to put him in charge of something that's very, very important. And if he was in a cabinet member of an administration, like Secretary of State, like she was, or anything like that, he would also get scrutiny. And he won't be in her cabinet. All I mean to say is that cabinet members, you know, get a lot of scrutiny as well. And so it certainly seems like if he's going to be out there that much, then he's going to come under scrutiny.
Yeah. What did she say she would make him? Did she use economic czar, or what word did she use?
Other people are using economic czar. She just said that she would put him in charge of her economic revitalization program. And when I saw him speak in Puerto Rico, actually, he specifically said that what he would be doing is more or less being like her ambassador to impoverished and underprivileged communities, extending the economic benefits to those areas, essentially, you know, making sure that they're not overlooked is what he was saying.
Mm-hmm. And what do you
say? Economic goodwill ambassador.
Okay. Economic goodwill ambassador. What do you say to Casey's point that she must be thinking or asking herself why Sanders is doing so well? Let me just ask you that. Why has he done so well?
Well, I do think there are a lot of Americans who are members of the Democratic Party who think that Hillary Clinton wasn't as far enough left on the issues and wanted to see her get challenged on some of those. And it forced her, it did, in this race to talk about things she might not have otherwise talked about. She had a certain set of issues that she wanted to talk about and plan to talk about. And Sanders forced her to talk about things like trade. He forced her to talk about a $15 minimum wage. You know, he forced her to talk about some of these economic inequality issues from the standpoint that he's come at them from, which are different than the way that she would have come at them from, as far as, like, equal pay for women and paid family leave. And so all around, you know, he's also, it goes the other way. She's forced him to talk about those issues when they might not have necessarily been at the forefront of his campaign. So it's forced a pretty strong debate on the left, and that's what's good about primaries on either side in a democracy, is that it forces a conversation on a lot of really important issues.
Thanks, Casey, for your call. Claire in Madison. Hi, Claire.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi.
I have been a Bernie follower and supporter for almost 2 years, and I am very disturbed by the press that these so-called Bernie bros are getting, which I think is probably not a lot of the Bernie people. I suspect there are some operatives from the other side of the aisle, so to speak, that are trying to stir things up and separate Democrats. Having said all that, I'm very disturbed when I see the chaos that ensued in Nevada. And I hope the Democratic Party will come back from all this, take a good hard look, and realize we need to involve everybody. If we want to get everybody to vote for Democratic candidates, they have to be brought over to our side and go along with us. And I will vote for Hillary if she's the candidate. But if the people that are just totally pro-Bernie are not lured to Hillary in the end, assuming she's the ultimate candidate, we're going to have Donald Trump as president, and we have to unite as Democrats. That's the bottom line.
Thanks very much, Claire. Francesca.
I hear that all the time on the trail when I'm at the Bernie Sanders rallies. I constantly hear from Bernie supporters that they feel that Hillary Clinton needs to do more to reach out to them and make it clear that they will be welcome in her campaign. And more than just say you would be welcome in my campaign, which is what she frequently says, they say that she, you know, she needs to act like it. She needs
she needs to do something to outreach. And maybe that's not Sanders as vice president per se, but she does need to extend an olive branch. But of course, if you talk to the Hillary Clinton supporters, they'll tell you, you know, look, like Bernie Sanders is the one who needs to unite his supporters. He needs to get behind Hillary to make sure that Donald Trump isn't president. As Hillary Clinton said, they all feel that he needs to do his part to make sure that Donald Trump doesn't win the White House. And so it seems like there's some reconciliation between the two sides that's still going to have to occur here after the primary gets over on June 14th.
Francesca, what do you make of the incredibly low favorability ratings that both Clinton and Trump have? How do we find ourselves, seriously, at this point in 2016, where you've got favorability 31-32% for the candidates who are running for president? How did that happen?
I think that in any political year, you're going to start to see the favorability ratings of these candidates go down. They always start high. People always have high expectations of politicians. And then, of course, when you see the attacks, like we've seen, that get very personal. It's not just Donald Trump who's made personal attacks this year. People, I think, forget how personal it got at times between Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton as well. And when you have that going on, of course, people's opinions are going to drop pretty low of people. They start to lose respect for them. But then, you know, when the election happens, you always see a huge bump in the first 100 days of the next president as well. So it ebbs and it flows.
Yeah. But they've never been this low for people who are running for president on both parties. I'm wondering if we've entered an age where people don't want to run for president, those people who may be more exciting to us, or I just don't quite get it. It just seems terrible to me that we're not very enthused about who the candidates are going to be on either side.
Well, I think that's a reflection as well of the types of attacks that we've seen on the candidates individually this year as well. I mean, it was pretty brutal in the Republican primary. And the Republicans, because there were so many of them running, there were 17 of them constantly hitting Hillary Clinton, even if she didn't have to take it from the Democratic side. And so I think it also has to do with social media and the digital age. Before, if candidates said something at a rally in California, you might not hear about it necessarily. But now, because of social media and Twitter and the news and everything, you know, the 24/7 media cycle, then you hear about all those things. And I think people are just inundated more with those attacks and that negative information than they were before.
Margie in Rockland. Hi, Margie.
Hi.
Hi.
I don't get to listen to all the political things going on, but I am aware. But I just have a comment. I was brought up in a little rural town in Hampshire, Illinois, and I'm 70. I'm not a young chick anymore. But I was taught then that we should always be respectful of past presidents and sitting presidents. And I have voted both ways throughout my life. And I just think we always need to be respectful. And after all, anyone that made president none of them have been perfect. None of us are perfect. And it seems like it's easy for people to look for the faults and not for the good points. And a lot of our presidents, and I voted both ways.
Mm-hmm.
And one little thing about Hillary Clinton, I really enjoyed the book that she wrote years ago, It Takes a Village. My daughter gave it to me. And she really does care, has always cared. This isn't a campaign issue about children. It takes everyone to help. And that includes the immigrant children and all the children in the world. We can't turn our backs on people that need us. And I know that well. I've been a public health nurse all my life and a foster mom most of the last 30 years.
Oh.
So just want to mention that we should always be respectful, and I'm proud that I was taught that.
Thanks, Margie, very much for your call. Well, you pretty much have thrown respect out the window in this presidential election, and then you have to ask the question, I think, Francesca, is even with presidential candidates, somebody has to earn your respect, don't they?
And that's another thing that we're talking about the negatives and how negative everybody feels about the election as well. I think that that's a big part of it, that Republicans and Democrats anymore, it's gotten so partisan to a point where anytime Barack Obama does anything, you know, you have Republicans who are just going to hit him really hard, and they interpret everything through a very partisan lens. And it goes with Democrats as well. it's interesting, some of the press releases that I get, the ones, you know, that never make it out to the rest of the world. Well, you'll even get people on the left, progressive groups or Democratic groups, so some of the things they say about Donald Trump are, they're like, oh, okay, that's a little bit of a stretch, that's a little bit of a reach. You might just be looking for things to criticize now. And I agree with the caller in that sense that it definitely seems now like everything is very, very partisan, and it doesn't matter if someone's a president or what their position is. They get hit really hard.
Yes, they do. Jean is next in Eau Claire. Hi, Jean.
Hi.
Hi.
Oh, well, I just two things to say. One, I'm in my mid-40s, so I do remember, you know, the Clinton era and Bill and all the problems. But, you know, I think people my age, especially women, they looked at Hillary. She had a choice. She could have divorced him. She could have left him. She chose to forgive him. And so, you know, who are we to judge after that? That was between them two. And the second thing is, I've been listening to a lot of news, you know, people calling in and talking in the last couple of months about Bernie Sanders and Hillary. I like Bernie, but I'm also a Hillary supporter. And basically, I consider myself a Democrat. So either way is better than what's on the other side. And a lot of times, I just noticed a lot that a lot of Bernie or Buzz people who swear they'd never vote for Hillary are men. And I kind of wonder sometimes if, because most of the women I talk to will say, well, if Hillary's the person, I'll vote for her. But I hear a lot of men that actually will say, if Bernie doesn't get it, I'll vote Trump. And it's just like, wow, where's that coming from? Mm. So, you know, I almost wonder if it's a woman thing, you know, the fact that she's a woman.
Francesca, what do you think?
I haven't specifically observed a gender gap here with that. When I hear the Bernie or Buzz at the rallies, it seems to be evenly split. What I will say is I see a generation gap. I certainly feel that the younger people are a lot more, they feel, you know, he's the one. He's the one. He's the guy. They feel a lot more remorse about the idea of having to vote for Hillary Clinton. They're the ones who are saying, absolutely not, never Hillary. And when I talk to some of the older Bernie supporters, they say they don't want to vote for Hillary Clinton, but she would be in their minds better than Donald Trump. And this is an election, and in 4 years there will be another election, and life goes on, and you just have to vote for the best candidate. And I think they seem to have that perspective a little bit of having voted in so many elections, that perhaps some of the Senator Sanders supporters, having voted in one or two elections, maybe this is their first election, don't have that same perspective and maybe don't feel that way because of that.
The generation gap is huge, isn't it, Francesca?
Yes, it is, absolutely. It's very funny at the Sanders rallies to see there's so many young people here, but there's also a lot of older people. It maybe doesn't seem like that the way all the pictures look of all the young people, but there's a large amount of older people here too. There's a lot of people who were anti-war,
yes,
anti-Vietnam, who are very supportive of Senator Sanders over his anti-Iraq war position, who are here. And it's very interesting to see all the young people and the old people hanging out and getting along here.
Thanks, Jean, for your call. Let's go to Ryan in La Crosse next. Hi, Ryan.
Hi. I have a quick question. We were talking about campaign finances and how Hillary and Bill are strategically splitting up and covering more ground. Who's flipping the bill for former President Clinton? Basically, I know he's allotted a security detail, but then you have to pay for hotels and everything else. And if she's doing it for Hillary as a campaign, does it come out of their finances, or is the taxpayers basically flipping the bill?
Well, it comes out of Democratic funds, I would think, doesn't it? Where does it come from, Francesca?
Well, campaign travel for, let's say, Hillary Clinton or Bill or anything like that, I mean, that's always going to come out of the candidate's campaign, the candidate's pocket. Yeah, but when you talk about the Secret Service, it is also true that the Secret Service and the American taxpayer will pick up a lot of that tab as well, because you have to, you know, you have to have them there, and there has to be a certain amount. There's a required number that have to come with her and have to come with him everywhere that they go. And it's also very unusual, of course, to have a former first lady, very unique, that's campaigning. So this is a very unique situation. You know, prior to this, we wouldn't have had a situation where necessarily
this early in the race, we would have seen Secret Service protection for either of the candidates. Because, you know, Donald Trump, by the way, has had Secret Service protection for quite a while as well. So it's on the Republican side, too. Ben Carson had Secret Service protection really early in the campaign. So on the Republican side, you know, they're spending a lot on service as well, and that comes from the American taxpayer, too.
Here's a tweet from Dave. What is Francesca's opinion of the current normalization of Trump and his campaign? Was the proto-fascist demagogue just an act?
And sorry, by the way, if you can hear behind me, they're singing the national anthem. I hope you guys like the national anthem.
Yeah, we've heard it. It sounds great. Nice sound effects.
We have the Bernie Sanders rally now, and it's starting here soon, so apologies for that, but
that's
very beautiful.
That's fine.
And as far as the tweet you're mentioning goes, he was saying the normalization of Trump, it sounded like. Could you repeat the second half of that?
Was the proto-fascist demagogue just an act? Mm.
Well, I mean, you know, I that's tough to say. And I like I said, I cover Democrats, so I haven't spent a ton of time around Mr. Trump and his campaign, especially recently as he makes that shift. However, I will say that from what I can see, I haven't seen a huge shift between the things that Donald Trump has been saying. I mean, he's been fairly consistent on his attitude towards Russia and North Korea and Iran and all those issues so far in this campaign. He really hasn't changed his opinion on most of those things. All that he said is that he would be flexible if he were president because he understands that Congress won't necessarily pass whatever he wants carte blanche and that he would have to work with them on issues. But more or less, he stayed consistent about where he stands on those big issues.
Yeah. And give me a sense, Francesca, you're in touch with everybody on the Democratic side and Republicans, too. You know your politics. What's going to happen and how much worry is there down ticket for the Republicans? Is there a lot of concern that they may indeed lose the Senate? How realistic is that? Are people really concerned? How are they countering that possibility?
Well, that is the concern on Capitol Hill, and we saw that play out with this Paul Ryan meeting that got so much hype. And really, it wasn't so much about whether or not Paul Ryan himself gets behind Donald Trump. This is much bigger than that. As Speaker of the House, he was representing his constituency. His constituency are all the House Republicans that, you know, feel concerned that with Donald Trump on the top of the ticket, they will be bound and tied to everything that he said, and they disagree with some of the things that he said about women, about immigrants, about Muslims, and these other issues. And the Senate as well. The Senate, as you were mentioning, there are a lot of Republican seats up this cycle. Last time it was Democrats, right. This time it's Republicans, and they are absolutely, even if Trump hadn't been on the top of the ticket, in danger of losing the Senate again.
Mm. Marilyn writes on Facebook, where will Bernie Sanders get enough money to run a national campaign against Trump? Should he be the nominee? He chastises Hillary for taking big money, but he would need lots of money to win. $27 donations will not be enough.
Well, maybe if Bernie is the nominee, then him and Trump can get together and they can both agree to the public financing option, right? Like, you know, Donald Trump doesn't want to take money from the super PACs either. He's shunned those. He said that he doesn't, you know, want to go beg for money from the billionaires either. That is the one thing they have in common. So, hey, maybe they can come to an agreement where they won't do that.
We'll take more phone calls in a moment. You're listening to All Things Political. We always have these conversations Mondays at 1 o'clock. Francesca Chambers is our repeat guest. She is right now covering a Bernie Sanders rally near Los Angeles. She is the White House correspondent for DailyMail.com, and she is covering the 2016 presidential race Democratic side. Phone number, a couple lines are open for you right now, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@WPR.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter as well at K Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go back to phone calls. Rod is next in Weyerhaeuser. Hi, Rod.
Yeah, I'm just beyond words, you know, when they start picking on Hillary, and I'm not breaking Hillary up, she probably isn't.
Rod, you're going to have to call us back. I'm sorry, we just can't hear you, so please call again. Nick in Brilliant. Hi, Nick.
Hi.
Hi.
Just hearing your discussion, it's really good. The guest is really good. What I got out of it is kind of that Hillary and the establishment are on the outs. You know, it's like their time is over. People like Bernie and Donald Trump are rejecting the super PACs. You know, I've heard it's if they're not going to be elected this one, it's going to be the next one. You know, it's the old way is out. It's done. You know, I think that's two people are still in the race, and they're doing it totally different than anybody's done in the last, you know, I don't know how many years. And, you know, two against one, really. I mean, it's pretty easy to see, I think.
Mm. The old way is out, Francesca?
Well, it also depends on who wins this election as well. You know, that's another big part of it. If a Republican, if Donald Trump wins this election, then 4 years from now, Democrats will have an opportunity to do this all over again, and perhaps they will go a more progressive route than they did this year, which looks to be Hillary Clinton. Maybe they will go the Elizabeth Warren route next time, for instance, possibly, which would be much more progressive. And she also stands with Bernie Sanders with the rejection of the Wall Street money. Or perhaps Hillary Clinton wins this election if she's the Democratic nominee, and then Republicans have another opportunity to do this all over again. And I'd hate to start speculating about who would run in that instance. I don't think we need to rehash 2020 already about who might possibly run on the Republican side, but I think we'd see some of the same names. Ted Cruz probably run again. Marco Rubio probably run again. So we know at least those two probably, if not some others. So they were the ones who, you know, raised a lot of money, accepted the money. I don't necessarily think that the Republicans are long-term possibly going in the route of Donald Trump if he doesn't win this election.
Mm. I know you're covering the Democrats, but you have thoughts on this, and obviously one of the big questions this go-around is the future of the Republican Party, too. Sean Wilentz, professor of history at Princeton, asks this question, and I wonder how you would answer it, Francesca. What if the Republicans are no longer a viable national party? What if the schism between Trump and establishment holdouts like Mitt Romney deepens and others follow? What if his achievement turns out not to be just hijacking of the party of Ronald Reagan, but catalyzing its disintegration? Do you think that's what's happening on the Republican side? Is it a major crack-up of the party?
I think that every election cycle, we sort of, you know, hear that same sort of similar story. I mean, when the Tea Party came about in 2010, everybody thought that could possibly be the end of the Republican Party. Oh, gosh, you know, the whole Tea Party thing was quite a big deal when conservatives broke off and started that movement. And you didn't see that happen. In fact, you had Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz, both of whom were born out of the Tea Party movement, the leading candidates for the Republican presidential nomination this year. And so I think that generally, because there's 4 years for every presidential cycle, it gives a lot of time for the pendulum to swing back in one direction and forth in the other direction. And on the Democratic side, you could say the same thing. There's a schism right now with the progressives, like the Bernie Sanders and the Elizabeth Warrens, and the more establishment Democrats like Hillary Clinton. But even we could see that sort of mend itself before the end of this election if Bernie Sanders gets behind her.
Right. Thanks, Nick, for the call. Craig in Onalaska. Hi.
Hi. My question is, every time I see anything about Bernie Sanders, it always indicates that he's a senator from Vermont that's a member of the Independent Party. So he's running on the Democratic ticket at this point in time for the nomination. If he loses it, is he going to change from being an independent to a Democrat, or is he going to maintain his independent status?
Francesca?
Well, in Vermont, this is an important point that I think also gets left out a lot of times, that in Vermont, he has to be an independent because of the way their party affiliation is set up. But he's always caucused with the Democratic Party, and he says that he will support the Democratic nominee in the presidential race. And he's not going to, you know, make a third-party bid. And he never was interested in making a third-party bid or running as an independent. All along, for instance, he said that he thought that the best way to achieve the presidency and reform America would be by reforming the Democratic Party and make it in a more progressive image rather than try the Ralph Nader route, which was to go and start your own party,
the, you know, you had the Green Party, and we all saw how that turned out. It was just too difficult to start something from scratch like that. And I actually had a chance to talk to Ralph Nader a couple days ago, and he was saying that Bernie should not run as an independent, not just because he doesn't have time now to qualify on the ballot, but he was saying that generally speaking, Bernie has realistically been a Democrat most of this time. He caucuses with the Democrats and votes with the Democrats. He more or less is a Democrat.
Thanks so much for your call. And let's go to Sheree in Waupun. Hi, Sheree.
Hi. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to point out two different things. Number one, I think it's a little disingenuous for your guest to make it appear like Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders' way of financing is kind of similar because, you know, while Donald Trump is, quote unquote, self-funding, he's loaning his campaign money with every intention of being paid back by the RNC, so, or by fundraisers. So it seems like it's, you know, it's not quite the same thing when we're talking about their difference in campaign finance ideology. But secondly, as much as I like Bernie and his policies, I have a bigger issue with the fact that he's not helping people down ticket. And if he wants to get his policies enacted, then I think he needs to be able to help all Democrats, you know, especially right. when it comes to the national level. And that's something I feel has been sorely missing. And that's why he hasn't gotten the pledged delegates that he has, because Hillary has always supported, you know, people down ticket. And Bernie doesn't seem like he does that as much. And I think, you know, if he wants to get his ideology enacted, he has to be able to support people down ticket.
Francesca.
Well, there's a lot to unpack there. Let me try and get everything. As far as the two candidates and having similar philosophies about the fundraising, it is true that Donald Trump said from the very beginning that he did not want to go to billionaires and beg them for money, because when you do that, you have to promise them things. You have to promise them special favors. And Donald Trump says he's not going to do that. He is not going to go and make promises and then be in the pocket of people, billionaires, because he wants to get their money for his campaign. That's something he might end up having to go fundraise because he needs that $1 billion, as we talked about. But from the very beginning, that's something he said that he was very, very uncomfortable with doing. And in that way, they are similar about that issue. And that being said, the second thing I think that the caller said was that the RNC is going to pay him back, Donald Trump back, for all that money he loaned his campaign. That's not true. That money that he loaned his campaign, he has since said, was he's going to make just a straight-out contribution. It was out of his own personal pocket to his campaign. He paid free and clear for the primary. It's the general where he might have to raise money through the party, as I was saying.
Yeah,
and then
it's going to be expensive. It's going to be expensive to run for president.
It's going to be very expensive in the general, which goes back to, I think, what a previous guest said. And that's how we got started on me facetiously saying that maybe they could both agree to the public financing option, you know, just like agree right. to not take the money from the billionaires. And that it's very expensive, and it just wouldn't be possible realistically for Donald Trump to come up with that kind of money, $1 billion, unless he sold off properties. And it realistically probably wouldn't be possible through small dollar donations online
right.
for Bernie Sanders to come up with $1 billion. So, you know, something's got to give there, which is why possibly in this hypothetical situation they could maybe come to an agreement.
Yeah. So is Bernie speaking now?
No. Bernie Sanders is still no. At these rallies, for anyone who's ever been, they have on about like 10 different people beforehand.
Oh, my gosh.
Local organizers, union folks. So that's what you're hearing in the background now is all these other people.
Francesca, do people ever say anything brand new?
Or is it surprised? Well, today, like I said, we'll have Rosario Dawson speaking before the senator
right.
at both of these rallies. So I expect her to say some newsworthy things. She always says newsworthy things.
All right. Well, do your yoga, take deep breathing so you can carry on here. You got your work cut out for you. Thanks so much for being with us, Francesca.
Thank you so much for having me. It's always a great time.
Yeah, it is a good time. Francesca Chambers, boy, is she on the road, huh? She's the White House correspondent for DailyMail.com. She is covering the 2016 presidential race right now with Clinton and Sanders. And we thank her so much for being with us. Thanks as well to KP Whaley for producing this hour and to KP for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee, where the sun she be shining, and it's a beautiful, it's one of those perfect days. It's a perfect day. Thanks for all of your calls. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. David Marin is in his beautiful series in the Washington Post, Looking for America, coming up hour two of our show.